This is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton, Alex Ferrario, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango joined in studio by Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic and our good friend Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN. So, gentlemen, yesterday on the air, I go on this little tiny diatribe about how, what can we expect from the Blues in Boston? They've got it handed to them the last few nights. The trade deadline is over.
So you're
my
super
hopes
positive.
Aren't high. Correct. And then those bastards go out there and they win 5-1. You know, another game where the goaltending makes it happen for them, you know? But, I mean, this team still continues to do whatever it can to surprise us.
Yeah. First of all, two things. I missed you, boys.
Yeah, we missed you too, man.
It's been a long time, Jay.
That's number one. It's been a while.
Shut up. You had clam chowder yesterday. You didn't miss us.
Okay, I didn't miss you as much as that clam chowder. It had been a couple years on the clam chowder, so I did miss that a little bit more. And second of all, Donnie, you have never done a tiny little diatribe. That would be like the adjective that I would not use before diatribe.
Well, that's very true.
To be
very
fair, Donnie's only got like, what is it, about a minute in between songs? There's not a whole lot of time for to get all that in.
God, if I'm talking for a minute, man, Tommy is losing his mind. You know what I mean? But I mean, like, but again, this team, like, the one thing that they are consistent at is being inconsistent.
Or, yeah, proving you wrong every time you go into a game. Because remember, we went into that Rangers game post-deadline when we did our podcast saying, I fully expect them to come out and just dominate. And they played well in the first period, but then shat the bed the final two periods. It's when you don't expect them to have a good performance that they come out and they play well. And that Boston Bruins game, I mean, it was a perfect storm. You're in Boston. It's Bobby Plager's birthday. Kevin Hayes is home where his family's in attendance. And, of course, his line has the most success. And Joel Hofer's in between the pipes, and you expect that game to go the other direction than what it did.
And Joel Hofer, I mean,
it's awesome.
You know, as the season has gone on, we have talked about it. Out of the myriad of things that the Blues have to be concerned about and to be worried about going forward, at least the goaltending is not one of those issues. He was awesome last night.
He was great, guys. He was great. And I got to give you a little context here. So when the Blues announced that they had called up Zach Dean, and I asked, is he going to be at the game tonight? And the public relations gentleman said, yeah, he'll be here tonight. And I thought to myself, because as you go over to the rink, you're thinking, what am I going to write about tonight? And is it going to be Zach Dean, or should I write about the 6-0 loss? And so I said to myself, I'm going to write about Zach Dean because, you know, there's just no way. The offense hasn't been there.
Yeah, this Boston's been red hot.
Yeah, this is a truck that they're playing tonight. And so anyway, I went with Zach Dean and did not write about their 5-1 win that Joel Hofer was a big part of.
So see, the jinx goes on all directions, Donnie. Yeah. It goes for you. It goes for me. It goes for JR.
I tweeted last night, this Blues team is hilarious because it's just kind of maddening. You can't really make sense of it. And the thing that I keep going back to when I start thinking about this team and I start thinking about the offseason is, where is it even going to start? Where is this retooling? Where is this all going to happen? And so I wanted to ask Jeremy a couple of questions because you have been with the team for the last week or so and before the trade deadline in New York, and you were with Doug Armstrong when that magical 2 p.m. time passed here in St. Louis.
Flurry of moves.
I got to tell you that in listening to him and all of his nervous laughter, it made me nervous. Like, it was like when my parents argued when I was a kid. Like, it just made me feel really, really uncomfortable, like, if he's this nervous that he's doing this weirdo laughter, then I should be panicked right now. But there's a couple of things I want to talk about. One, I am completely floored by the fact that there was nobody coming after any of the Blues players. That is unbelievable to me and completely telling. Also, a lot of times you guys are really great at reading between the lines when it comes to the coach
really
and the general
great.
Manager.
I'm awesome at it. Coloring between the lines I'm good at too if you don't want to.
I'm not good at that.
No.
Were there things that Doug Armstrong was saying that we need to read between the lines while that was going on last week? I mean, I know he's always very honest with us. I feel like, you know, he kind of tells us the truth, whether it's painful or not most times. But it was just, I don't know. It would just felt very weird to me. And maybe that's just the state of the team that's kind of overriding that for me at this point.
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, he was honest again this time, and we're talking about his post-trade deadline press conference. You know, he did say that, quite frankly, we didn't get any offers. You know, I think we do have to be a little bit specific there in that, you know, he was asked a lot about the UFA, so the Scandellas, the
Kapanens, Furanas,
those guys.
Blake.
You know, we didn't expect a lot of offers for those guys. Secondly, you're not dangling Robert Thomas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pavel Buchnevich, I'm sure there were some conversations. It didn't come to fruition. But you're not getting offers on those other guys, you know, that we didn't just mention, you know, the Krugs, Falks, Shens, those types of guys because of the contracts. So, you know, in terms of, did Doug Armstrong say something that should make us more alarmed than we were going into the trade deadline? Yeah, like there isn't a lot of activity that's being discussed. And how are you going to fix this team if there aren't any teams out there that are interested in making a deal with you? You know, having said that, that was the trade deadline. And I said this to Doug in the press conference. I really do believe that that's like a superficial date, like that trade deadline. You know, there's so much frenzy around it. Everybody expects you to do something.
Yeah.
But you're talking about making deals with Stanley Cup contenders who got their eye on the prize. They're up against the cap. They might make a tweak or two here. Unless you're Vegas, you can just bring everybody
just do
in.
all of your tweaking.
You can do all that stuff. And so it's hard to make a deal. Like, so for the people who woke up trade deadline day last Friday and thought that Torrey Krug was not going to be a member of the Blues by the end of the day, it just wasn't going to happen. So big picture is this. The question that I still want to tackle with the Blues is, are you still going to try to be competitive, or are you going to look to the future and build through these prospects? I still think the message from Doug Armstrong is they're going to try to do both. And I think that's going to be difficult. As Craig Berube said when he walked out the door, he said, you know, it's tough to coach to win now when you want to play some of these young kids. Alex, you know, I'll call it an apology or whatever. I said to you a couple weeks ago, hey, Matt Kessel will be back. Well, guess what? He is back. However, he plays so well, they could have won a couple games with him in the lineup. And how many points are you out? Six. So those kinds of things make a difference. So those are the questions that they're going to be faced with for the next year or two as they try to determine who they are.
That's the part that I was just so I'm so confused as to where they're at. And, you know, Donnie, you asked the question, did you read between the lines on anything? And the one area that I did, not so much read between the lines, but the way Doug said it, I'm like, man, something's in the works here. Because towards the end, they were talking about, you know, would you anticipate more moves in the offseason and does the market shift? And he talked about, he goes, look, he's like, we have a plan in place and we didn't want to veer off of that just at a trade deadline and trade a ton of pieces away just for trade's sake. He said, we've got a lot of assets and that we feel like those assets can turn into players that can help us right away. And when we're ready to spend those assets, we will. And when I heard him say that, it flashed me back to last season when he talked about this being a retool and wanting to mimic what the LA Kings have done. You look at like 3 to 4 years and you're talking about getting back to a competitive window. Well, if they're on that same process, and however you view it, did you view last year as year one? Did you view it as year zero and this year is year one? If he feels like they've garnered assets that they can use to make their team better, it seems like this offseason he has figured out that this is more of a roster problem than a coach problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is he approaching this offseason saying, cool, we've garnered a lot of assets. We know what pieces we feel like can help this NHL team. Do all of these other assets that we've gained, do we start moving these for NHL-ready players? That's the part that I heard him saying. I'm like, man, if you're him and you have a plan in place and you want to start competing, because look, you've got players in place and Thomas and Neighbors and Toropchenko and Binnington and Parayko. You've got players in place that you can compete with now. And frankly, 3 years from now, those guys are almost out of their prime and it doesn't benefit you. Do you start spending assets that you've garnered over these last couple of years and flipping them into NHL players? That's the part that I heard him say. And I say, man, this offseason is very intriguing.
Guys, were you at all surprised to hear him mention about the potential discussion of an extension for Pavel Buchnevich?
Not shocked, not surprised, but here's the thing is, you know, first of all, do we know the exact truth of how interested the Blues were in trading them? No. We just know that there was interest, Vegas, Edmonton. We know that there were scouts sent to watch Pavel Buchnevich, and the teams internally discussed him. did they call and make an offer? You know, potentially. I agree with Doug Armstrong. The price should have been astronomically high. And if you don't get that price, then you just move on and see if it happens down the road. Now, with all the talk about Pavel Buchnevich possibly being traded, there's still the possibility of him being signed. And Doug obviously touched on that. The thing is, depending on where you are in this retool rebuild, and gosh, I wish we could come up with a different word, right? Can we do that on this pod? Can
we need to come up with a creative word.
We can. Yeah. Sure, yeah, we can.
All right, okay. What is it?
Oh, I mean, you can't put me on the spot. Like,
come on, you guys are radio guys. You come up with stuff on the spot all the time.
Yeah, man, that means I was a C student. That means
I found best ways to get my essays approved to pass.
Where were you a C?
Oh, where was I? Oh, well, listen, let's.
Time out?
Okay. I was less than a C student at Florissant Valley Community College. There were two reasons in which that I was there, for the radio station and to try to kiss girls.
Which happened first?
Well, the radio thing is the only thing that came out of Florissant Valley Community College, thankfully.
You didn't kiss any of the girls?
Not really, no.
If you got C's, those are D's where I went.
Dude, there is no doubt about that.
but I think whatever they're in, you know, it doesn't make sense to sign a Pavel Buchnevich for 8 years, right?
Right.
You know, because it's going to take him to 38, and you know, you're talking about all these players that the Blues have passed on. David Backes, Alexander, you know, they didn't want to sign those guys until they were 38, 39. Alex Pietrangelo.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you can get Pavel Buchnevich at 5 years, maybe 6 years, but if you're him, you want to maximize this next deal. If you're going to start it when you're 30, take it as long as you can, because the reason is, you know, we all know this, you know, if you go to try to sign a deal at 35, you might not be getting 2, 3, 4 year. Right. So get the money and the term now while you can. So I think what Doug was saying there, to answer your question, is, we want to talk to his agent. We'll see where it goes. And if they can find something in the middle that they like, Pavel goes for it, then he's here. If not, then they can look to move him.
Call it a reset. How about we call it a reset?
That's too close.
Yeah, but we got the re in there. Yeah. Call it a reset. You're trying to reset the roster.
How about ridiculous?
Well, that needs to exactly be what this
we
is.
We are definitely getting there. There's no doubt about that at all.
After one more offseason, you think you could call it ridiculous. The part two that JR mentioned with Doug is, listen to what he said in that comment. He said, we'd like to sit down with his representatives and see if we can find a deal where he wants to be here. Like, Doug doesn't, like, at least in the past, it doesn't seem Doug doesn't negotiate back and forth. Well, we want this. We want this. It seems very much so where it's, this is what we'll offer you, and we're not going to back away from it. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like, at least hearing him talk, is, yeah, we've got an offer that we feel like we want to pay Pavel Buchnevich, and if he doesn't want to match it, then we're going to not be able to re-sign him. That feels more like what this is going to be with Pavel Buchnevich. And the matter of the fact is, are you going to find a deal? Because, look, Donnie and I said it on Friday. None of those deals that took place at the trade deadline, I would have been happy if they traded Pavel Buchnevich.
I would have been pissed.
I would have been pissed if any of those deals took place, because none of them makes you better right away. Do you get that offer in the offseason? No. Well, then you might just stick with them and see what happens. The problem with that is the return gets lesser and lesser as you move towards that deadline next year. And at some point, do you hold on to the player too long like you did with Vladimir Tarasenko? You still got a great return for him, but did you hold on to him too long to where you could have got a better return trading him earlier?
I think that's possible. I think you can hold on to him too long, and I do think that teams this year would have gotten two playoff runs out of Buchnevich, so therefore the package could have been nice, although we looked at some of these deals and, you know, it wasn't great. But I will say this. If Pavel Buchnevich is the number one trade asset at next year's trade deadline, you're still going to get a significant return. You know, could it be better than what you would have got a couple days ago? Who knows? But he's going to continue to be a prime asset for whoever.
But does that return help you in the ridiculous that you're in right now, or does it become more of a rebuild?
Because
if you get the Jake Guentzel return,
it's rebuild.
That's not benefiting you for another 3 to 4 years. Like, cool, you got Michael Bunting back, but that was it. It's not helping you within the next year or two unless you strike gold at the draft.
Yeah, and the other 12 guys that Pittsburgh got might not even play.
Exactly. Well, I mean, again, Scott Wheeler on The Athletic said that those were the 6th, 8th, and 9th best prospects in their system. Like, if I'm Pittsburgh, that doesn't help me right now, but it's the best I could have got because Jake Guentzel was a free agent and you knew he wasn't re-signing.
Right, so you had to get something there.
Right.
Absolutely. So I understand that. If it was a second and a fourth or whatever for Buchnevich, I would have not been cool. Talk about Zach Dean, guys. Talk about why did the Blues finally decide to bring him up now? Is it just because they have had so much trouble with scoring that they just got to try something? How has Dean been playing down in Springfield? Tell us what we need to know.
Yeah, I think the number one reason they called him up when they did was because they were in Boston. It saved him gas.
Yeah.
So he didn't
don't have to fly him there.
Didn't have to fly him on a separate flight.
Keep the legs fresh. You put him on the charter coming home.
Hey, listen, I understand saving a dollar. I get it.
We all do it.
Blues certainly haven't, spent into the cap. They haven't tried to cut corners for years. So, he was excited, though. I talked to him last night in the press box, and he said it was so great. They're in Boston. I just jump on the plane and head back to St. Louis with them. Why did they call him up right now? I think a couple things. One thing, it's after the trade deadline. You know what your roster looks like. Also, and we can talk about this the rest of the pod here, is, they're still just the 6 points out, right? So there is a chance we can't forget about that. But at the same time, they want to look at some of these guys. And Zach Dean, to answer your question, has been playing well in Springfield. He started the year slow, just like Zach Bolduc did. Mm-hmm. Drew Bannister was down there. He said tough transition to pro hockey for those two players. They switched him over to the wing. He got some traction, put him back in the middle. He's playing center. He's up the lineup. 6 goals, 3 assists, I think, in his last 12 games. Mm-hmm. I asked him about that production. He said, yeah, it's fine, but the way I play my game, I'm not worried about the points. They're just a byproduct of if I'm doing things right. And he felt like he's really made some progress this year in doing the things that you need to do, like we talk with a Jake Neighbors, right? The little things that make young players reliable. So I don't know that we'll see him Wednesday against LA. I guess there's a chance, but, tough opponent, playoff implications. He hasn't even had a practice with the team yet. I think there's a chance maybe later on in the week we could see Zach Dean make his debut.
Well, and I know Curbs mentioned this on the broadcast last night. Daniel Tkachuk, who's the head coach for the Thunderbirds, said that he's a prototypical blue player, meaning he's feisty, doesn't take no for answers. He goes to the front of the net. He plays with that grit that I would imagine is valuable to this team. And if you're Drew Bannister, I would imagine you want a lot more of those guys on this roster right now. And if you're Doug Armstrong, you want to figure out what that looks like. And I remember Grant Francis, our producer on the broadcasting side, he had talked to the Dean during training camp and just talked with him about, being traded from Vegas and how he plays. And Dean had told Grant that he plays a lot. He tries to emulate his game a lot like an Ivan Barbashev. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you've gotten that down in Springfield because it's a tough league to transition to, but if you've got the feistiness, the goal scoring's there. I think he scored 33 goals in junior hockey last year. It made sense. When I first saw it, I'm thinking, okay, what are they trying to tell you here? Because, of course, I always try and read between the lines. Are they saying that, this guy's progress has been good, 9 points in 12 games? Do you need to see him up here and see what he can provide? Or is this more like, hey, we know what this season is. Let's get this kid up here right now. Like, I'm torn in terms of reading off what took place with Zach Dean. But, I love the decision. I hope they play him every single game because I think you want to see what that guy can be, especially next season if you're going to put him on this roster and let him start getting more reps at the NHL level.
Well, now I got a bone to pick with Zach Dean because I asked him last night. I said, so who do you kind of motto the game or who do you kind of like? He said, well, not really anybody. So if he would have given me Barbashev.
Come on. Now, do I know if Grant said Ivan Barbashev and Dean's like, I play a lot like him. That is going to remain to be a secret with Grant Francis.
He's giving Grant the scoops there. And hey, and going back to what you said a second ago, Daniel Tkachuk, who's that coach there with the Springfield Thunderbirds now. He took over for Drew Bannister. When Blues fans hear a coach say he's a Blue, like you just said about Zach Dean, it really gives you the goosebumps, right? Because you start thinking, okay, he's talking about a Brian Sutter. He's talking about that, those types of guys. I guess we got to be a little bit careful when we hear Daniel throw that around because I also asked him about Jake Neighbors, and he said he's a Blue. So
nice. Okay, so we're 2 for 2, though.
That's good, though. That's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Now, if you would have said he threw some other guy out there and said he's a Blue, then we got an issue.
Yeah, we start naming Kasperi Kapanen. He's a Blue.
Yeah, he's a Blue.
Klim Kostel.
He calls Klim Shady a Blue. We got issues here right now.
Guys, real quick, and I have a different question that I was going to ask, but real quick, we have not really talked very much about Zach Bolduc since he's been brought up. Obviously, as a young player, he's going to get some limited minutes and limited exposure in certain situations. What have you guys seen from the young man? The one thing that I have noticed in just a couple of times, it seems like he can shoot that sucker.
Oh, yeah.
it seems like he has got a rocket.
It's a scary good shot. Like, every time he's taken it, it's been like, oh, damn, you want to see more of it. I mean, I understand what they're doing. They're protecting him and not putting him out there every single shift in tough situations. You want to rotate it a little bit. I want to see more of it. I mean, he hasn't been a liability on the ice. Have you seen a couple of turnovers here and there? Yeah, but, I mean, frankly, that happens with this team a lot right now. So, in the offensive zone, he is going after pucks. Like, he's not... What I thought Zach Bolduc was a guy that just skates around and waits for pucks to come to him so he takes shots. What I've seen at the NHL level is when the puck goes in, Zach Bolduc is the first one going after to retrieve that puck. And that's a nice thing to see for a guy that you know has a really good shot. It's, are you working hard to get the puck and put yourself in a position to score goals? So I've loved it. I want to see more of him in terms of top six. I'd love to see that next step for Bolduc in terms of put him out there a little bit longer, maybe 12, 13, 14 minutes a night. Put him on one of those power play units, the second unit, just to see what that one-timer looks like. He's got the shot. You want to see more sustained offensive zone time. The problem is the team hasn't been doing offensive zone time. I can't blame Bolduc for it if his line mates out there aren't creating offensive time as well.
Yeah. Donnie, there was a play last night in the game, third period. I mean, there couldn't have been 2 or 3 minutes left to go in the game, and one of the Bruins players had the puck in his D zone, so Bolduc kind of chased him down in the O zone, and he pushed the puck loose, and then he passed it, just a little 8-foot pass up ice to a teammate. And there was a scoring chance there. And that's him just, you know, making a play late in a 5-1 game. This is him still being aggressive. So what I like here is the fact that it couldn't have been a year ago when I had fans saying, Bolduc, bust. I remember a couple years ago, you know, people were saying, Neighbors, bust. Like, these guys are 2021,
and both are
right?
Blues.
So, yeah, they're Blues, according to
Daniel Tkachuk.
And so I think that, look, is he going to be an all-star? Is he going to be a top-line guy for the Blues for 15 years? We don't know that yet. But he's come up, and I think he's stood out. Like Alex said, a few turnovers, you see him get knocked off the puck, or he doesn't, you know, take it from the D-man and get it up ice right away. But that shot, I mean, if you start talking about an offense with a Snuggerud and a Bolduc with these two shots that these young guys have, that could be pretty lethal moving forward.
Yeah.
One of the things...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
I look for you guys to keep me... to keep me grounded on what I'm about to say, because I could very well be wrong. But there are times, and this has been a problem that I feel like has really never kind of went away, but it feels like there's times when the Blues have the puck that there is the tendency for that extra pretty pass or that extra pass of any kind.
What's he talking about,
I was
going
to say, I don't know what Blues team you've been watching, Donnie. That's not a thing.
And also, too, shot selection. Taking shots that are getting blocked, taking
Donnie,
shots that miss the net.
What are you talking about?
I could be wrong.
Way
am I wrong?
Off.
No, you're okay. You're giving me trouble.
You bought that?
I did. Well, I thought that I was right, but I don't know. You guys know more than I do. But no, so. But is that a thing that you can teach NHL players? Like, I mean, you know, man. Like, here's the thing that I think in my head. When Josh Allen got drafted by the Bills, everybody was like, he is not an accurate deep ball passer. You can't teach it. You can't teach it. You can't teach it. With some of these guys, like, I wonder if their shot selection and stuff, I don't know. It just seems like it can be problematic sometimes, the extra pass especially. But, like, even shot selection in general sometimes seems to be kind of shoddy.
It's not even the pass selection. It's the team receiving passes. Like, sometimes the pass selection is just odd where they're forcing passes. Like, that happens, though. Like, we see it happen all the time in terms of teams forcing passes. But there's been a lot, at least in this last two-week stretch, where the passes have been behind the player, it's been in the skate of the player, it's been out of reach with the player. And I've heard Joey talk about this a lot. Like, there's an art in terms of receiving the pass. Now, I've never played hockey, so there could be people listening right now being like, I'm a complete idiot. But just hearing somebody who has played hockey, there's an art in terms of putting the pass in the right spot so that the player can receive it and continue play. But it seems a lot right now, the passes have been in a spot where it's forcing a player to stop, reach back to make it so that they can receive it, and then try and look for the next play. And by that time, you're talking about the player picking it off and going back the other way. And when you think of some of the best teams, it's like, I watched a shift of the Carolina Hurricanes play. It was one of the first games that Kuznetsov played for them. And it was like watching the Harlem Globetrotters on ice.
That shift was unbelievable.
It was crazy. And, I mean, I think I retweeted, if I'm not mistaken, but they held the puck in the zone for about 2 minutes, and it was pass, 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 pass. It was just putting it like a diamond around the ice. And you're thinking, how are they pulling this off? Well, they're doing it because the pass is on the stick to the point that the player doesn't even have to think about it. He's looking up when he receives it, already looking for his next selection. The Blues are in a spot right now where these passes are, they've got to look down to receive it because it's behind them. And when they look up, they've already got two players on them. So there's going to have to be some, and I don't know if this is coaching. I don't know if this is players. I don't know how this side of the game works. But if you're not playing north-south hockey, if you're not dumping it in and going to receive it, your passes have to be precise to the point that you're already thinking about what my next pass is 3 moves from now by the time that first pass is on my stick. I think you've got guys that can do it. I know Robert Thomas can do it. I know Pavel Buchnevich can do it. I know Tory Krug, Scott Perunovic. I've seen these guys do it. But if all five players aren't on the same page, then it's not going to work. And now you're talking about, well, this team can't figure out passing. So if you can't figure out passing, you're not going to get any zone time.
I think you could put together a list of the top five things that have ailed the Blues this season, and the passing would be one or two.
Yeah.
It for sure would. And I know people say power play. Well, guess what? The passing is because of, you know, the power play hasn't had success because of the passing in part. So let me touch on that first, and then the other part is, look, how many times have we seen the power play move the puck around a little bit this year, and all of a sudden you see a puck go behind a guy, and then it's off the wall, then the other team's clearing the zone, and then it takes 40 seconds to regather, you know, all because of that pass wasn't in the neighborhood of the guy. So we've seen that a lot this year with the power play. But even more importantly, I think, than the power play, getting the puck out of the zone. Look, the Blues went to that zone defense this year where they're kind of sitting back and blocking shots, right? Well, the upside of that zone defense is to be able to pounce on pucks, loose pucks, and get them out quickly. So there have been a lot of loose pucks result in this situation. Players pounce on them, and they go to make that 6, 8-foot, 10-foot support pass to get out of the zone, and it's off the mark.
Or it's picked off in the neutral zone.
Or it's picked off, and it's back the other way, and then there's another 40 seconds of zone time. So, I mean, we can talk about not shooting enough. We can talk about a lot of things. But if you want to do a reel of the passing this year and just watch it for an hour, I think that's been a huge hiccup.
Sounds like a great Athletic article that should be coming up real soon.
That sounds like a lot of film cutting, and that takes a lot of time.
You're great at that, JR.
No. Guys, does this team need a new set of assistants? And I'm not trying, and listen, and I want to preface what I'm about to say. I love Steve Ott.
Yeah.
I loved him as a player. I love him. I'm just starting to wonder if maybe the deaf ears, you know, that weren't listening to Coach Berube anymore and that selectively listened to Drew Bannister are doing the same with Otter and with Weber and with...
Yeah.
Does this team maybe need a fresh stable of voices, maybe? I don't, and listen, again, even in saying that, I'm not saying I'm correct. I'm just asking the question because the message ain't getting through.
Well, I mean, to me, for me personally, I hate blaming the coaches I hate saying, like, well, they got to get somebody else who could come in here, because you just did that with a guy who was a Stanley Cup coach and it didn't make a difference.
You're right.
And JR, you've been around assistant coaches more than I have, but like my first real taste of assistant coaches in terms of covering the team was Kirk Muller with the Blues. And I remember the players talked about how much they loved Kirk because the assistant coach was able to take what the head coach was saying and explain it a little bit more to the players. And from my understanding, everybody on that team loves Steve Ott and his ability to explain one thing a different way. Now, are we talking the power play side of things? Yeah, maybe Steve Ott shouldn't be in charge of the power play. Are we talking about the defensive structure on your team? Yeah, maybe you don't need a Mike Weber in that spot. But I just always feel like there's a mesh of the coaches. Like, you have to have the head coach and the assistant coaches on the same page, and you made a coaching change in the middle of the season. Is Bannister here next year? Well, then you probably do need assistant coaches that are more on the same page as Bannister. Is Bannister not here? Does a head coach come in and want Steve Ott and bring a different system in? I don't think they need different voices. I think they need a different system, because right now, the system, whatever they're running, doesn't work with this roster. So it's either fix the system or fix the roster. And that's going to be which one's easier to do. Like the cliche saying in hockey, it's easier to fire a coach because you can't fire 23 players on a roster. Well, you've gone through two coaches now that the inconsistencies are still here. Do you get a new voice that tries to bring a new system in? What happens if that doesn't work? Like, you can't keep cycling through that.
Right.
It might be time to fix the roster and say, this is how we're playing. If you're not on board with it, let's play this way.
But don't you run the risk? I'm sorry to interrupt you, JR. But, like, don't you run the risk, though, of if you're bringing back a team next year that very well could be a lot similar to this one? I mean, hopefully they're able to make some moves in the offseason, but maybe they won't be.
Right.
So then, if I'm going into next season with a gigantic chunk of this roster still here and the same coaching staff, all of those things together make me think, oh boy, this is going to be a real long year again.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't love the idea of blaming the coaches.
No, I understand.
It feels very lazy to me at this point. But again, there is just some kind of disconnect and trying to figure out where the hell they go from here.
No, it's all valid. I do want to preface it by saying, you know, a little bit of a bias for Steve Ott. You covered him as a player.
Yeah, I love
his
Steve
entire
Ott.
Career as an assistant coach. But a couple things here. Any coach that's around for a long, long time, like Steve Ott has been, like Craig Berube has been, there's always going to be the question of, hey, is it too long? And hey, are people listening to you? You know, the power play got a little bit of an uptick when they started getting some input from Brad Richards, right? And Drew Bannister came in. But, you know, I'll stick to this roster being the biggest point of concern. It's hard to have success with a roster that I don't believe is up to snuff. I mean, you know, who's the best fantasy football general manager in this room right now?
Probably no. Donnie beat me actually this past year.
Yes, but I
Humble.
No. But do you remember, because we do the two quarterbacks for the first time?
Oh yeah.
And I
super flex.
I could have taken Josh Allen with the third overall pick, and I took Justin Jefferson. So I'm an idiot. So Alex,
either one of you guys.
Russell Wilson is my second quarterback, so not Alex. But go on.
But it would be like if I gave the best general manager in this room, one of you two, and like gave you the Buffalo Bills lineup, right?
It's that's terrible.
We can stop this
Donnie
right now.
Donnie just stared darts through me.
Can I get the Kansas City Chiefs roster? Because then I'll be better.
I couldn't help it, Donnie. Sorry.
Dude.
Donnie, I know.
I thought we all liked each other. This was the friend circle. I guess not.
Yeah, no, apparently not.
But I think, so, you know, could there be changes? Yeah, there could be. I think in terms of, you know, you ask about Steve Ott, his future, you know, I think that's going to come down to what do they do with the head coach?
Yeah.
Like if they say, hey, Drew Bannister, you know, this is yours. We want to go through the ridiculous with you.
Yeah, the ridiculous.
Then, you know, hey, what do you want to do? What are you going to do with the staff here? Sorry, the throat is just gone here after a week.
I bet.
I've been doing a lot of cheering,
but,
JR.
The situation, I think, if they say that we're going to go in a different direction with the head coach, you know, 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, that new coach brings in a staff. So I could see some change this year, but I think it would be tied to what do they do with the head coach.
And the one thing I will say with Steve Ott that is – I think he's incredible at. And the other factor into this, too, is does Steve Ott get a head coaching job? I mean, because if there's head coaching jobs available and you don't want to keep recycling through this, there might be a team that looks at Steve Ott and say, we want that guy for our roster. But Steve Ott is an awesome faceoff coach. Watch, look at the faceoff numbers over the last couple of years, and like it has significantly improved every single season. And this year, I think the Blues are a top 10 faceoff team in the National Hockey League. That's an area that you jeopardize losing if you lose Steve Ott.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best parts for me as a fan doing this podcast and really having to layer things out, you know, and really like breaking it down and breaking it apart and realizing that the coach can only do so much. The coaches can only do so much. And I think that even at the beginning of the year, I don't think that I really pulled this apart as roster construction as much as I should have. I think I was hoping best case scenario in most situations. And, you know, we just saw that the best case was, you know, we've seen that the best case wasn't going to happen. But wouldn't it be something if these dudes went on a run and challenged for this, for a wild card spot, like all of us, like that to me would be the ultimate ending to this Blues season, even if they didn't make the playoffs, is if they pushed and got close, because I have them buried a week ago.
Well,
so
yeah,
it would make all the sense in the world.
Well, but the thing about it too, and we talked, JR and I talked about this on our BK and Ferrario show, like I'm so torn because like you've got the fan side, you've got the pre and post game side, you've got the sports enthusiast side. Like on the fan side, it feels like, man, Vegas and LA and Nashville have set them up so well. Like, this is a daunting task for you to not only go on a run, but hope the other team stumps their foot and you get into a playoff spot. But it's like, on the other side of it, are you jeopardizing your opportunity to get a really good draft pick? Because if you're trying to get out of this ridiculous that you're in, at some point, like I went back and looked at this, every team, if the playoffs were to start today, every team in a playoff spot has had a player that they selected in the top five of the draft. Every single team.
Wow.
And at some point, do you have to get that player to keep up with the Colorados and all of these top teams in the National Hockey League? Are you jeopardizing your opportunity to get there? By no means am I saying just tank and blow it up, because I don't think you... You're too good to do that.
Yes.
You've got an awesome goaltending tandem that doesn't allow you to do that. But if you go on a playoff run and let's say you miss it by 3 points, now you're going to be picking 15th or 16th overall. How much does that jeopardize the opportunity for you to put yourself in a better spot to start competing faster if you're selecting 7th or 8th overall? But as we talked about, JR, there are plenty of smarter people in terms of hockey that have said, look, picks don't matter. Playoff experience matters. And if you can just get into the playoffs, one, you got a goaltender that could steal you a series. But two, Neighbors and Kessel and potentially Snuggerud and Bolduc, all of these guys just got a taste of the playoffs and makes you hungrier for it next year rather than missing it again and saying, well, we're going to be bad, so we're probably going to miss the playoffs again next year.
Yeah, and Donnie, we took a look at, Alex and I did the schedule the remainder of the way. So you got 17 games left. You have 11 at home, 6 on the road, and the way it breaks down in terms of opponents being playoff or non-playoff opponents.
Man, you're going to be Rain Man if you just rattle this off right now.
Well, I think you have 17 games. You have 7 against playoff teams and 10 that are not against playoff teams. And that includes like 2 against San Jose, 2 against Anaheim, 2 against Minnesota. So you got 10 games.
Ottawa sprinkled in there too.
Ottawa in there. So, you know, there's a chance. But we'll see what happens. But going back to what Alex is saying, you know, whether the Blues make the playoffs or not, that's I think where the main concern, the biggest outcry that I heard from fans this past week after the trade deadline, you know, feedback that you get from the fans, and I get it, a lot of people want to just, oh, you know, fans are fans, right? Well, there's a lot of level-headed fans out there who I respect, and when you cover the team for a long time, you see the names, whether it be social media or comments on your Athletic articles, and you know who's, you know, been over the years a level-headed person, and I saw a lot of love Doug Armstrong, an Army we trust, Stanley Cup 2019, never forget, but I don't know what the plan is. And I think that message could be a little more clear. Now, Doug could sit here and say, I've said everything that I need to say about it, and I feel it's as clear as it can be. Okay, but you want to be competitive, but you also want to look to the future. And I think what's happening is there's a roster and a team that isn't going to be competitive And even if they somehow sneak into the playoffs this year, we're looking at pretty much the same thing next year, unless he's able to do that Doug magic. And in the meantime, you're drafting 16, 17. And you got up to 10 last year. You got a good player in Dvorsky. But is this what you want to be doing? Half competing, maybe make the playoffs, be just outside the wild card going into the stretch run, and then, oh, yeah, by the way, we're drafting 16 or 17. That's not going
to
get you there.
And see, the problem the problem with that, too, is you have to look at the roster you have now. And 2 years ago, when you thought that you were going to mesh both the future and your current roster, you thought that that current roster was going to play up to the level that could kind of integrate that younger roster in. But the problem is, if you're him, if you're Doug Armstrong, you've seen now two straight years of inconsistency with this roster. I mean, you don't have any of these guys that are coming up available to you yet. It's been the same roster. And I mean, again, we've talked about this. As much as I think highly of Jimmy Snuggerud and Dvorsky and what they're going to provide, they're not game changers. Like, they're guys that come in and they provide a spark, but it's not like these are Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid players that change the entire outlook of your team. At some point, you look at it and say, does my roster match the plan that I had in place of competing? Because I think now that you've had to hire or fire a head coach, bring in an interim head coach, and still talk about the same inconsistencies, you have to look at that and say, man, I know we're planning for the future with these guys, but I don't know if my current roster can compete with these guys that are going to be here in the future.
Well, there's one thing that this podcast does, is it consistently makes me feel not great about my Blues.
I did it twice last week with them, and I'm like, man, Donnie, every time we end, I've made you upset.
No, guys, it is the reality of the situation, and I am one of those Blues fans. I feel like I'm a fairly level-headed Blues fan. In Army, we trust. I love the guy, but boy, how you're going to make this happen, I don't know. Because also, too, I would think that other general managers in the league are very aware of the Pavel Buchnevich steal that he got from the Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
The Braden Shen situation
from
Philadelphia. The Ryan O'Reilly. Like, they are not eager to be the next one suckered. So, like, I don't know how he is going to be able to do this. And I was watching on Saturday. I didn't have anything going on last weekend. And so I think Saturday I was watching the Predators and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I just watched a little bit of it. And I know Minnesota's right behind us. But even just the intensity of that game between those two teams, if the Blues were playing in that game in particular, they would have absolutely gotten it handed.
Finished third.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just. So, like, it's just, we're just a ways away. And I think the more that time goes by, the more I realize that we're pretty far away from this thing needing to be where we want it to be.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's scary to me.
Wait a minute. Didn't the Cardinals with Schilt, they won 17 in a row?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many Blues games are left?
Oh, so you're saying they should bring in Mike Schilt as the interim head coach with Drew Bannister? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Is there a rally squirrel? Have there been a squirrel in Enterprise Center? You get a rally squirrel going.
It would be so Blues-like for them to go on a little bit of a run and get us all titillated again.
And then miss.
Yeah.
That is what I would, and just from the fan side of it, that would be frustrating.
Yeah.
Because it's like, but that goes to the inconsistencies where it's been up and down. It's like, ooh, 5-game win streak. Ooh, 3-game losing streak. 5-game win streak, losing streak. It's like, and then you miss it by 3 points. If you're going to get in, you have to have the consistency from start to finish with this stretch. And with 17 games, and look, we can look at it and say you've got 10 playoff opponents and 7 non-playoff opponents, or the flip of that. You just freaking beat Boston. You just beat a goaltender who has a .922 save percentage in Jeremy Swayman. But we've also laid eggs against Chicago and Columbus and San Jose. And, like, you look at the schedule, I'm like, well, you could run up there against Ottawa and take them down. Could you? Because we've seen the ups and downs. I just don't know how to read this team.
You know what makes, you know what starts to make things better? If we can
drinking?
Figure out.
Oh, no.
That
does help.
I'm telling you guys, he's ready to come here and to stay here and to make a home here and to make his family here. Jacob Chychrun is tired of being moved around and being the talk of the trade deadline. We need to get that guy a home. It needs to be here. We can take JK, send him up north of the border in that deal. And then we're starting to retool that defense. Every time I see a quote from Jacob Chychrun about him getting traded, I get sad for that dude. For the last 2.5 years, his life has been, am I going to be in Phoenix? Am I going to be in Ottawa? Where the hell am I going
to
be?
Did you hear the report yesterday that Ottawa would prefer to keep him? But they also have another guy who's making $8 million. They'd like to trade him away.
We'll see. Gentlemen, I swear, at some point or the other, I'm going to start being glass half full guy and
we'll
stop
get you
being
there.
Such a glummy Gus.
And I can't believe it took me until minute 51 of the podcast to see this, but is Alex, is that an Aladdin glass?
It's an Aladdin glass right there. That is my favorite Disney character of all time. The genie, Robin Williams, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a great character.
That is my favorite one.
I cannot make fun of that. I can, however, make fun of you for missing the Friday podcast because you're going to see Dan and Jay in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, I'm not happy about going to Columbus, Ohio. I haven't heard great things about Columbus. My sister lived in Cleveland. Wasn't great. But I'm very excited about Dan and Shay.
Can I say something?
If only Rascal Flatts was there too, you know? Life is a highway.
I was in Cleveland 2 days ago, or a year ago. I was in Cleveland last year for 2 days. That downtown area smelled like throw up for 2 entire days.
My sister lived there for 6 months when she was going to medical school.
You're going
to
say rehab.
Well, not that way. I felt like I needed to go to rehab after I was in Cleveland. I don't think the sun came out once while we were there. We were there for a weekend. And it's like, is it always gray here? Just always.
Yeah.
Is it always cold? We were there in June, and it felt like it was winter. I'm like, this isn't fun. I'm like, ooh, we could go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Cool, but I still have to walk outside at some point.
So, but again, I just, let's go back. So you are taking your hard-earned money, and you and your wife are going to see this Dan and Shay.
That's a wonderful concert. Wonderful concert.
You know,
you just got to get on board. Donnie, what you got to do, and sometimes you just got to
plug up my ears so that I can't hear the music.
You got to
and
the
then
car.
I'd have a chance.
You put a cowboy hat on.
Never.
And you turn the music on, and you just listen. You just listen. And at some point, you'll start singing.
Can I tell you guys, when I got on the plane in Boston this morning, I thought, I want to get back as fast as I can. I can't wait to see Donnie give Alex the business about somebody he's going to go see.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And also,
I told him I wasn't going to be here Friday, and I said, I'm just going to be out. I'm going to see a concert. And then I said it again, and Donnie's like, I knew it was going to be somebody I didn't like because the first time you said it, you just said concert. It's like, I couldn't lie about it either.
But also for reals. JR, I know that you've been running your ass off for the last week, and you've been out of town, and you've barely been home today. Thank you so much for stopping in and doing this with us, dude. Like, for real, it is greatly appreciated.
He didn't have a voice, and he's like, we'll do it.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I got to tell you guys, no pat on the back here. I'm going to stick my back out here so you can hear. You got to wait for me to say it, though.
There we go. Guys, no, we'll do it. It's a pre-pat.
I left a week ago. Let me tell you, get your hand ready.
Here we go. One more time.
5 salads.
Oh, my gosh.
And 2 salmon dinners.
Oh, my gosh.
On this trip. Not 1 burger, no fries, and
clam chowder bowl.
Let me see, 2 beers.
2 beers?
Dude.
How about that?
That's actually an awful road trip.
That sounds bad, doesn't
it? You had 2 beers? The salads are good. I love me some salmon, but 2 beers.
That's fantastic.
Well, 2 beers for breakfast. I didn't qualify it saying for breakfast.
He actually had all of those only for breakfasts too, by the way. The salads and the salmon.
I didn't count the dinner ones.
Yeah. Dude, I can't go to a different city and eat responsibly. It's like all of a sudden, like it's almost like my brain is like, oh my God, we have to find out where all of these awesome, unbelievable places are so that I'm sick when I get home from eating so much.
You know what I do when we did this because we're going to Columbus this weekend. Have you ever watched the Man vs. Food show on Travel Channel?
Yeah.
I watch the episode of the city that he goes to and find the 3 restaurants, and we go check out one of those restaurants.
Oh, dude, that's
awesome.
We did
it with Nashville, we did it with Memphis, we did it with Vegas, and we're going to do it with Columbus. I don't know where he's been for Columbus. I have to watch those episodes. So we're going to figure out where to go. I've heard there's a good breakfast spot in Columbus.
We should probably let Jeremy go home.
No. Didn't you tell him that this was the 2-hour episode that we were doing today?
I can imagine in his head, he's like, can we just wrap this up?
He's like,
I just want to go home.
Up.
For our friends, Jamie Rivers and our buddy Jeff Burton, it's Jeremy Rutherford, Alex Ferrario, Donnie Fandango, thanking you for listening to the Last Minute Blues Podcast. And as always, let's go Blues.
The Last Minute Blues Podcast. Hear more at 105.7 thepoint.com.